Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's weekly wrap-up. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York, and for the next hour, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486. If you'd like to talk to us live, of course, you can hit us up in the chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. I guess the biggest news coming out of the world of wrestling this week, other than, of course, Zelina Vega being released, which we'll talk about, Drew McIntyre becoming the champion, which we'll talk about, is that AEW actually had a rather large surge in their viewership. If you're a regular listener to this show, you know that we have kind of mapped out that AEW tends to get about 100,000 more viewers. We call it that locked in 100,000 viewership plus. Always seems to be the case. If NXT gets 600,000, AEW gets 700. NXT gets 700,000, AEW gets 800. And we've called it proof that that 100,000 is the real loyal fan base. The 100,000 is the fans who are not going to turn over to NXT irregardless. They're AEW fans, and that's what they're going to watch. Well, this week, it went up to 200,000. 200,000 more people approximately watched AEW than NXT. And it was, you know, a lot of people are saying, they fluctuate, they go up and down a lot, AEW. One week they're 650 or 700, next week they're 900, next week they're 700. They're all over the map. So you can't really get a good grip on what that means or if this is a significant boost to AEW. So what I decided to do is I talked to a few friends of mine who are promoters. One who promotes wrestling, one who promotes concerts in the area and some other things. Here's what I've come up with. It really depends on your perspective. Now, we could dismiss this as, well, let's see if they draw 850,000 next week. But still, 100,000 people is a significant boost. A significant boost. And it seems this week as though NXT dropped some viewership, meaning that extra 100,000, some of them didn't tune into NXT this week. That's my take, is that some of them who normally tune into NXT tuned into AEW this week. However, another perspective from a friend is this. He says, listen, you have to understand, if you're promoting a show and you've got, the top band, or one of the top bands, your best band in the area, against normally an opening band for a big act, your top band might beat them out. They're just an opening band for a big act. And he says NXT is the opening band for WWE. He says none of their big names are there. None of their superstars are there. None of their household names are there. And because they don't have any what he calls major drawing power, he says if you come within 100,000 of a federation that has Chris Jericho, Matt Hardy, John Moxley, all of these names, you could almost consider that a win for NXT, that they're even in any competition with them. In other words, if Metallica's playing in a local arena and you're doing a gig near there, same time, and you still manage to pretty much sell out your little hall, you can consider that a victory because, most people are probably over at the Metallica concert, right? So in his opinion, this doesn't really matter. He said what you're looking at is a WWE C squad competing against AEW's A squad and still managing to stay within striking distance of them, which really amounts to a victory for WWE. However, the other person says, well, look, here's what you've got to understand. When you see an audience perpetually start to grow, 600,000, 650, 700,000, 750, 800,000, 850, when you see that, you at least know you're reaching that many people. You may not keep them. But if you, at any time in your life, get a million people to watch you, you know you have the potential to get a million people to watch you because it's happened. So therefore, you can say with a certainty, at one point, we had a million people watching us. We could have this be our normal. And then ask yourself, did NXT ever have a million people watching them? The answer is no. Neither has AEW that I know of, but they've come close. They've come into the high nines once, I think. They might have even broke that million. I don't know. But I think this is a victory for AEW in some sense because they have widened the margin of their victory. Now, if it was 120,000, 115,000, even 130,000, I'd say, well, you know, 30,000 more people stayed home that night or people tuned in because there was something they wanted to see or there were some disgruntled NXT fans who said, there's nothing I want to see on NXT. But 100,000 plus is a substantial amount. And when I look at the NXT card, I say to myself, well, they're not interested in Johnny Gargano much. They're not interested in Damian Priest much. They're not interested in some of these characters. Maybe they are interested in a little bit in, you know, Finn Balor. It's been proven that they're interested in Undisputed Era. And the women traditionally, and I know I'm going to get in trouble for this, the women traditionally do not draw. You could say Becky Lynch and Ronda Rousey drew, yeah, because the way you set it up, that drew. But Rhea Ripley and Io Shirai was not going to win the day, even though this was easily the best match on either show. Easily the best match on either show. And the WWE, obviously, NXT, takes their women's division far more seriously than AEW. And I don't care how much Cody Rhodes comes out and says, we're taking it very seriously. We want to try to be an equal opportunity. No, you don't. No, you don't. You're spouting off nonsense now. NXT is handling their women's division correctly. But despite all of that, you're still growing that gap between viewership of NXT and AEW to a wider margin. Now, if the critics are correct and AEW falls back down to, you know, 800,000 or 780,000 next week, then what's our takeaway? Well, our takeaway is they are sporadic. Their fan base is sporadic. They'll watch when they feel like watching. They won't when they don't feel like watching. And that's probably not a good thing. Because that means you're never going to be able to substantially say we can count on a certain amount. Right now, if you're AEW and you say to a television station or a network of any kind, what is your average viewership? You could peak, you know, you could play up your peak and say, 900,000 people, almost 100 million people. Well, how many times have you done that? Once. Okay, well, then that doesn't count. What is your average viewership? And you're going to get around 700,000 people. A little more, probably. Until they can do this on a regular basis, we can consider this an anomaly. But it's a positive anomaly still because it shows you that on this given night, over 100,000 more fans than usual tuned into AEW, Mike. So I can't see how that's anything but a win.
I can't see how that's anything more than a win as well. And look, it's 850,000, right? Let's just say they drop 100,000 next week, AEW does. that still puts them at 750,000. And if what we think with the NXT is they remain flat about, you know, between that 630,000 to about 700,000, then that's still a win, you know?
Yeah, but, you know, here's the problem with that. If they drop 100,000 people next week, you have to ask yourself why. Why did 100,000 more people watch this week than last week? What's the problem? How come we're being so sporadic? Usually you don't see that with any television show. Usually you see, yes, there's a little slight variance, or it goes down or up in small numbers over the course of several months. In other words, if your show is failing, you might see 1,000,003, 1,025,000, 1,002,000, 1,001,000, 990,000, 900,000, and then you're hitting the shitter, and you know you're hitting the shitter week by week by week by week. Or you see 500,000, 600,000, 650, 675, 700,000, 750, and you know you're increasing your audience. But it's really strange when you're 650,000, 850,000, 700,000, 750,000, 698,000, 900,000. It's all over the map. And that's weird, because then you cannot successfully judge what is it that we're doing right or wrong. It's very hit and miss. I would give the example of a store. Most retail stores can open up on any given day and give you a very, very close estimate of what they will do for that day. A store may say, we're going to take in $10,000 today, $50,000 today, $100,000 today, because that's our normal. And if they take in $150,000, they say, wow, we had a really good day. But that's not what we're normally going to do. We just happen to have a really good day. If they take in $40,000, they're going to say, what the hell happened? We had a disaster. But they're not going to panic unless that becomes the new normal. Or they're not going to celebrate unless that becomes the new normal. They're going to say, that was an anomaly. Let's see if it happens on a regular basis, and then we can increase our prognosis to maybe we'll do $140,000 every day. Or we'll have to lower it to, apparently, we're only going to do $80,000. AEW is having trouble with that, because it's all over the map. And there's really no rhyme nor reason to it. So it's very interesting, Todd, to see the amount of people change almost on a weekly basis for AEW fans.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, fans always keep changing, switching back and forth between shows every week. Like you said, with ratings and everything going on, and it's a lot of people doing this.
See, I don't even know if they're switching the shows, though. What I'm going to have to try to do from now on, and I'll go back and I'll have some answers for you guys on Sunday's show, I'm going to just add up both numbers, AEW and NXT's numbers. And then we can divide them any way we want, and we can see if that is your core base of wrestling fans who are tuning into shows. In other words, if let's say you had 1,000,000 viewers for both shows, and each one got 500,000, then you know it's equal. But if one gets 750,000 and you say, wow, what a great show, but the other only got 250,000, it's still only 1,000,000. The audience didn't increase. It just changed where it watched. I want to know if the wrestling audience is increasing. In other words, I want to know if now there's 100,000 more wrestling fans than there were, or if 100,000 NXT fans said there's nothing I'm interested in this week. That's going to be the tell. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go back for a month or two and see if how that number in total, adding up AEW's ratings and NXT's ratings as one big pot, if that has increased or decreased. Now, coming out of NXT is some stories. Number one, we saw Arturo Ruiz, who was in the draft. He was literally in the WWE draft. He was chosen in the WWE draft. And he was a part of that Raw Underground thing that didn't work out. And he's back in NXT. What the hell good is a draft? They picked his name and people were like, who the hell is that? And then we never got to see him. And he's back fighting Kushida. And from what I hear, he suffered a bicep injury and he may be out for a while. Now, some people are saying, wait, hold on, this could be a fake injury. This could be just a storyline injury. But my sources are telling me, no, it's not a storyline injury. He's hurt. So, wow. Now, speaking of injuries, both Io Shirai and Rhea Ripley supposedly injured. Theirs are not as serious, though. I heard a report late last night that really, really worried me. Somebody said, look, Rhea Ripley is seriously injured. She has blood coming out of her, literally coming out of her ears. Well, that is not a good sign, because that's usually a ruptured eardrum or a fractured skull or concussion, something major. So I had not gotten to see it yet, so I went back and watched. And I think what had happened here is she had her earrings. She has those multiple piercings, and they were all torn out during the match. Like five of them piercings got torn out by accident. And I don't think the blood was coming out of her ears. I think the blood found its way into her ear canal from the exterior part of the ear. And it looked, I admit, when I first seen it, I said, oh, Jesus. But then I noticed that she had those earrings ripped out. I don't think she's seriously injured. Now, they're saying she's beaten up a little bit. She has multiple contusions and things, but I don't think it's serious. I think what you saw as far as the blood in relation to coming out of her ears was not coming out of her ears. It was leaking its way into her ear. So good for that. Io Shirai, sore neck, stiff neck, probably didn't do much damage to it, really. Had a very, very physical match. Like I said, the best match, in my opinion, on both shows. Then they did a funny thing, though, didn't they, Mike? They embraced in the middle of the ring, and that's usually means one of them's leaving, and you sure know it's not Io Shirai. So reports are now circulating that was Rhea Ripley's send-off, and we'll be seeing her on the main roster.
Right, and that's the thing. Yeah, that's what it is. And if that's the case, then which was she drafted?
No, not that I know of. No.
So she could end up on either show. All right. So we don't know where she's going to end up, but that does mean that, And look, as far as just one more thing on the ratings, as I recall. Before COVID happened, they were, both of them were up there, NXT and AEW were up there. AEW was up there in the, 850s to low nines at one point, before COVID, all right, on a consistent basis, all right? So, but COVID happened and they both dropped, they both dropped to, 800, 700,000, whatever it was that they dropped to because of COVID, because nobody was allowed in. We know what happened there. So you can't really gauge it by going back just several months. You got to gauge it versus what happened before the virus happened,
But you know what the odd thing is, though, Mike? Why would ratings go down at a time when more people are home and not leaving their house? That doesn't make a lot of sense. I've heard people say, well, it was Christmas shopping season or it was spring break and I wasn't watching much TV. So ratings went down on TV shows because people are out and about and they're doing their thing. No one was out and about and doing their thing. Everybody was home quarantining. It's about to happen again, I guess. And to be brutally honest, I cannot figure out for the life of me, why ratings would go down during a time when people are pretty much quarantined in their house. You'd think, if anything, it would go up. So that's why I'm saying, if you go a few months back, I don't want to go all the way back to the beginning, because the very first AEW show drew, I think, over 1 million people, right? Because everybody was, we want to see this product. And they haven't done that since. They've come close, but they haven't done that number since. So I think if we just go back to a few months, we will see if the wrestling fans themselves, the audience, is growing or shrinking. If we use my example of the 1 million people, for instance, if no matter how you slice it, it's still 1 million people, whether it's 999,000 people watch one show and one person watches the other, or it's 500,000, 500,000. It's still the 1 million in the pie. But if we can clearly see, well, now it's 1,000,003. Now it's 1,000,002. Then there's 200,000 or 300,000 more wrestling fans. That's key, because I want to see if both of these federations are actually increasing fan base or just trading fans back and forth, like Todd suggests. Because sometimes I feel that could be the case. Or some people just tune in and say, yeah, it was fun, but you know, not for me. Which happens occasionally, too. I mean, I think we've seen this with Game of Thrones, where, you know, something would happen and people would say, did you see what happened with this? Happened, something horrible happened. People are like, what? I never heard of that show. What the hell happened on that show? Let me watch it next week. And then they watch it and say, yeah, nah, not for me. Okay, well, then you saw a peak. You saw it go up because curiosity was peaked. And non-fans tuned in for 1 week. But they didn't tune in the next week. So that's why I'm saying, let's see if we have an increase in actual wrestling fans, or we just have that anomaly where, okay, there's an extra 100,000 people tuned in this week for whatever reason. Because they're sick of politics, because they're sick of the news, because they're sick of whatever. So we'll see what happens with that. Look, AEW put on a good show. And they had a lot of their top guys. And, you know, all in all, was it a better show than NXT? Well, yeah, I think it was, only because there was more, what's the right word for it? If you're an AEW fan or you're a pro wrestling fan who knows some of these guys, there was more interest with Pac, certainly, and, you know, that Moxley was there. You had a really decent match with Serena Deeb and Thunder Rosa, which was not as good as Rhea Ripley and Io Shirai, but it was good. It was still one of their better matches. I don't know what the situation is. You know, you had Brian Cage and Ricky Starks, Cody Rhodes and Darby Allin. The Darby Allin thing, at one time I thought Darby Allin was going to be like the future of AEW. I don't know if you can keep sustaining this. I would think Sammy Guevara and MJF have a better chance of being the future than Darby Allin. Darby Allin's going to be one of these guys who's always going to be around there and be interesting and have his fan base. But I don't think he's going to be exactly what we had hoped. But they did put on what I would consider to be a better show. Because while they were putting on matches, you know, that arguably you could say, well, it doesn't matter much, like Orange Cassidy and Kip Sabian or introducing Top Flight, WWE's putting on some, NXT's putting on some lame-ass blindfold match with Dexter Lumis. And nobody cares. Nobody cares about that. Now, will they care about Undisputed Era coming to Finn Balor's defense? Yeah, maybe. Maybe. That's why I'm interested to see what will happen next week. But I would give NXT this week, you know, it's a shame. Because NXT, both of their great matches were the women's matches. The tag team match and the championship match. Both of those matches were A matches. But the rest of this was a nightmare. In my opinion, Cameron Grimes and Dexter Lumis, that's not a match. And then there were the other ones were basically squash matches. So I have to give it a C, and that's pretty bad. Because without the women's matches, this would have been an F, or damn close to an F. D minus. I'll give it a C plus because the women brought it up that much. However, AEW, I think, came up with at least a B, a flat B. And the ratings showed it, Mike. So, I mean, listen, if NXT wants to succeed here, and I think they already know this because Kevin Owens is coming in on commentary next week, they're saying. Kevin Owens is going to be a commentator. You know that's going to lead. There's no reason for them to change commentators for one night unless someone's going to attack Kevin Owens and this is going to lead to something. So I think they already see the writing on the wall and they're starting to bring in the heavy artillery.
And I do agree with you. You know, I do agree with you that it's a C. It could have been an F, you know, for NXT and B for AEW. I did like that whole angle with right at the end of the show on AEW. I enjoyed seeing that NXT is not, the WWE is not going to turn Mr. Ruff into just a guy that got even a little, just bury him because his name, he has the same initials as Leo Rush, you know?
Yeah.
You know, he's now the Cruiserweight Champion, which I enjoy. I think he's got enough about him to make enough charisma about him to make something of that, you know, and that's good. But other than that, you know, I did like it. AEW better, yeah. Minus the two women's matches on NXT, but I liked it better. And that's the thing. If they keep getting people that like their product better, then they're gonna keep that 150,000 to 200,000 more people. If these are just people that want to see what's happening on the show, okay, I get that. But if they actually like the show better,
right,
then that's bad. That's bad news for the WWE.
Mike, even if they keep a part of them. Even if they say, well, we had 850 last week and we only had 700 and something the week before that, and now this coming week we have 810, that's still a gain. That means out of the 100,000 extra people that watched your show, at least a portion of them said, I'm going to watch it again. That's a victory. You don't have to have every one of them. You don't have to do 850 again. See, that's what a lot of people are saying. They're not going to do 850 next week. Maybe they won't. But if they do higher than they did the week before that, it's still a positive gain. It's still gaining fan base. Sometimes that's the way it works. You do 750, and then you do 850. And you say, oh, wow, we jumped 100,000 fans. And then next week you do 800 even. And people say, you lost fans, you lost ratings. No, not really. 100,000 people tuned into your show, and half of them said, you know what, I like it good enough to tune in again. That's a positive, because that means maybe next time it'll be 900, and then it'll be 850, it drops back down to, and then 950, and then it drops to 900, and then 1,000,000, and it drops to 950, as long as it continually goes up. Even by 10,000 people, you're on the plus side of this. So, I mean, that's good news. Now, as far as the Drew McIntyre winning the title thing, here's what I've been told about this. Randy Orton knew about it the week of SmackDown, but it was a last-minute decision. They did basically what we said on this show. They thought about it and said, how is this going to help Roman Reigns in any way, shape, or form? And said, yeah, we can't have this. We're going to have to use Drew because there's no heat going to be gotten off of Randy Orton or Roman Reigns for either one of these guys. It's not going to help either one of these guys. So that's why the decision was made. We kind of figured that. We brought that to you and said that. So, look, is it a better match? Of course it is, because there's more interest in who wins. So it's got to be a better match. Now let's get on to the Zelina Vega thing, because she's back in the news. She did a Twitch and basically said it's been one of the hardest weeks of her life, and that she makes this claim. She says, I was making as much or more money on Twitch as I was on my downside guarantee of the WWE. But here's the issue with that, Zelina. You were making that because you were a WWE superstar. Do you know how many beautiful women there are out there who have you fan sites and Twitch sites, and they might make some money. They don't make that kind of money. They don't make that kind of money. The reason they don't is because they're not really famous. They're just very beautiful women, and somebody's scrolling through and says, wow, that girl's pretty, and then whatever. You're making it because you're famous. Why are you famous? You're famous because you're a WWE superstar. See, that's where the difference comes in, and I can't believe how many fans don't get this. And apparently she's talked to some unionization people who are saying, well, we had some very interesting talks with her concerning possible unionization of wrestlers as actors. As actors. It's not going to work. And I'll tell you why it's not going to work. It's not going to work because actors, by their very nature, are, in fact, hired guns. They're exactly what the WWE says they are. You'd be much better off trying to get into a sports union, even though wrestling isn't a sport. Because if you try to go through the actors thing, they're going to say, well, of course they're private contractors. Every actor's a private contractor. Jim Carrey can play Ace Ventura, but then he can go play somebody else. Why can he do that? Because he's a private contractor. Here's what he can't do, unless he owns it. He can't open up a site and says, oh, this is Ace Ventura Pet Detective site. No, you can't do that. You don't own it. Because if they want to, the people who do own it can have somebody else play Ace Ventura. Much like somebody else can play James Bond. Okay? Daniel Craig or even, God rest his soul, Sean Connery, it's not James Bond. You don't own James Bond. So, and I know people are going to say, well, but she used her own name. It doesn't matter because her own name meant nothing without the fame of WWE. Her own name meant zero. So she tearfully said, look, I was making more money. I told you this was all about money. See, this is the thing that disgusts me the most. Everyone has the right to make money. God bless her if she can make more money on Twitch than she can in the WWE. But then be honest with the fans and say, this is a critical part of my income. Don't be, the thing that bothers me the most is I won't be talking to any of you, really. You could talk to any of us at any time. Go on Facebook Live and talk to us, like I said before. The reason you didn't is, oh, I'll miss that money. That sweet green I got for chatting with you guys. So it's all about greed. It's all about greed. If you sign the WWE contract for whatever amount of money, that's the money you're getting. You don't want to sign for it, don't sign for it, Zelina, but for God's sake. And if you think Zelina Vega and somebody from some actors union thing is going to bring down the WWE, or that the new administration, if there is one, is going to bring down the WWE, you're sadly mistaken. It's not going to happen. Now, somebody said to me, Ric Flair's still on Cameo. How come Ric Flair can be on Cameo? Because he's Ric Flair. That's why. What option does the WWE have? Rick, close your Cameo account. No, I don't want to. I just won't do anything for you anymore. I won't accept your money. Fire me. Okay, well, he's got leverage. He also can say, you didn't make my name. And they didn't. You didn't make Ric Flair. The WWE didn't make Ric Flair. So there is a difference, and he's probably negotiated a different contract because he's Ric Flair. So I don't know what's going to become of this. The story that apparently Aleister Black said, I never formally requested to go to NXT. I floated the idea around because I would have liked to have done it and hoped that people would pick up on it, but they didn't. But I never formally went into Vince McMahon's office and said, I'm requesting going back to NXT. So that story was kind of shot down. Apparently he did float the idea about hoping somebody would pick up on it or catch on to it or say it's a good idea. Nobody did, so he kept his mouth shut. Good idea. Good idea, because you're probably on shaky ground, Alistair, yourself. The WWE, at least Vince McMahon, has decided that you're not a draw and you're not going to play a major part in WWE in the future. And right now you're a mid-carder and you're very, very expendable. Now, I don't want you to go to AEW. That's the only reason you're hanging on. Mike, that's a sad part, too, is that I think the WWE hangs on to people they don't even want or don't even appreciate only because they don't want them going with any other federation.
Right. I mean, I've always used the example of Ted DiBiase. They paid him not to wrestle. They gave him their money to not wrestle for them, right? He still got paid. He didn't have to show up. He could go home and sit on his couch, you know. So then there's that. And as far as Zelina Vega goes, think about this. I don't know if she knows who this person is, but Tammy Sitch wasn't big until she went to the WWE. People knew who she was, but she didn't become the most downloaded person in the history of the WWE at that point until she became Sunny.
Exactly.
You know?
And had she tried, Mike, had she said, well, I just work at Dunkin' Donuts, but this is what I look like, and if you want to come onto my account and, you know, pay for pictures of me in bikinis, she'd have made a little money on the side. She wouldn't be the most downloaded celebrity in the history of the WWE. You're absolutely correct. That's exactly what my point is. The WWE afforded her that fame. Okay? That's what ended up happening. This is the reason, you know, people write books. And you say, well, they're not an author. Yeah, you know, I'm writing a book. I'm, a musician or an actor, so I wrote a book. Well, you're not an author. And if you weren't that actor, no one would buy that book. So it's your job that afforded you that fame. And when it's a specific job that afforded you that fame, then I guess they have the right to say, you need to choke over a part of that income. Now, I know a lot of people will say, well, do you think The Rock would have been a movie star without the WWE? No. But he became a legitimate movie star. In other words, if tomorrow Mick Foley writes another book on my experiences in wrestling, well, the only reason anybody's buying it is because he's a wrestler. But if Mick Foley wrote a spy novel and it was really good and people said, wow, he's a really good writer, then that has nothing to do with wrestling. And he'll get a whole new fan base of people. So it's apples and oranges. Originally, people came to see The Rock in a movie because, oh, that's my favorite wrestler. But then a whole new audience branched out of people who just said, no, I like his movies. Some people probably didn't even, they know he's a wrestler. They probably never watched him wrestle. So it branches out that way. Right now, Zelina Vega cannot say she's making more money on Twitch than WWE because she's just who she is. That's just ludicrous. She's making that money because she's a WWE superstar. Period. End of conversation. Now, something interesting happened on AEW, didn't it, Mike? This is the second week in a row that we have seen Impact Wrestling talent. And there is some rumblings that Impact and AEW might be considering working together. I mean, we saw Conan, we saw the commentator, this is very interesting because AEW doesn't do things by accident, and this seems to be purposely done.
Right. And think about this. If they are going to work together, that means that the TNA Impact has on their women's roster, that's going to instantly improve the women's division. I mean, hell, you can't do any better than Rosemary and some of the other people that TNA Impact has on that women's roster, you know? And so if that's the case, then that's a good – yeah, I think it was Don Callis that was
yes,
the commentator
yes.
that showed up. Yeah, so – and I think he's on creative for TNA or for Impact, but I keep calling him TNA for Impact. So, again, yeah, you know, and look, as far as that goes, yeah, it can't do nothing but help both companies, you know. And the fact of the matter is right before he started Impact, right before he started AEW, one of the companies he was in, Cody was Impact. It was Impact and it was ROH. So I wouldn't be at all surprised that at some point we hear that Cody's making a deal with ROH, you know?
Well, they've certainly shown a willingness to work with other companies. This is a major difference between WWE and AEW, is AEW has shown a willingness to bring in talent from other companies, NWA, for instance, other places. And if they do this, in other words, if they say, look, it's a big enough pie for all of us, that's a ratings boost. That's going to be another ratings boost. Because some Impact fans who say, I like Impact, I don't like AEW necessarily, maybe they're going to tune into AEW if their favorite Impact guy is going to be on there, or a few Impact people are going to be on. You know how that works with a TV show, right? Where, one of my favorite actors is going to be guest starring on the show tonight. I've never watched this show before, but maybe I will because I like this actor or actress. And then you watch it and say, this is not a bad show. Maybe I'll watch it even though they're not on it next week. So, see, that's actually pretty smart. WWE doesn't want that. They've never wanted that. They want to be their own island, and I can appreciate that and respect that, but I can also appreciate and respect trying to work with other companies. Usually this doesn't work well, though, because invariably every company wants their guys over. You know, they're not going to say, hey, Impact, could you send over some of your top guys to job to us? No. Or Impact could say, hey, we'll send some of our guys over if your guys will job to them. No. So then it becomes a give and take. Well, okay, but we don't want to end up looking bad in this, but we don't want to end up looking bad in it either. It's a give and take, and it's hard sometimes. It's very hard. So we'll see if that's successful or if they're just teasing us with that. One other thing we do want to talk about, of course, tonight's SmackDown. This is probably going to be a spoiler, so if you don't want to listen to a spoiler, put your fingers in your ears and repeat, the virus will soon go away for about 40 seconds and everything will be fine. Apparently Big E is going to be the final member of the SmackDown Survivor Series team. He was supposed to actually get that honor last week and they ran out of time. With everything that was happening, they decided they just wouldn't, they'd hold it off to next week. So Big E is supposedly going to be that last member. Now, they could change their mind, because the WWE does this all the time, but I can't think of anybody else that would be a better fit. So it'll probably be Big E. I mean, at least they're using him. I think the Big E push really never got off the ground, did it? We were told he's going to be separated from New Day, and he's going to go on a big run that's going to lead up to at least the mid-card titles. U.S. title, something, no. Not so far. He's been relegated to doing skits with the Street Profits. Interestingly, you pull him away from a tag team to do skits with, and then say, go do skits with these guys. You're their new funny guy. It's really weird. So at least they're going to use him. Now, decidedly, I've had fans write to me and say, look, aside from Roman Reigns' match, I'm not much interested in this Survivor Series. I understand why. Trust me, I understand why. It feels like nothing is on the line. It feels like these Survivor Series matches are just thrown together matches. Nobody really seems to care if they win. Certainly, Braun Strowman doesn't look like he cares if he wins. Sheamus doesn't look like he cares if he wins. The only guy that looks like he cares really if he wins is AJ Styles. Over on the other team, what do you got? Baron Corbin, Jey Uso. It's not like they're saying, come on, guys, we really got to win this. We got to make the blue brand superior. It's like they don't care if they win. Over in the women's Survivor Series matches, you've got total team decimation to the point where, I hate to say it, but the Raw team looks like mid-carders at best, except for the tag team champions. And SmackDown is going to follow suit with a really lousy team. It's not going to be a good match. And, yeah, it doesn't feel that special this year. I remember when the Survivor Series felt so special because you had teams and you say, I can't possibly imagine this team losing. But they're against this team, and I can't possibly imagine this team losing either. You had the best of the best in there. And you said to yourself, Jesus, some of these guys are going to be eliminated and pinned. I've never seen pinned before. That was the beauty of the Survivor Series. This year, it's people you've seen pinned a million times. They're going to get pinned a million more times. There's nothing special about any of them for the most part. And you're saying to yourself, yeah, ho-hum. This is probably the first year that Survivor Series is going to be sold by a non-Survivor Series match. Todd, it just doesn't feel like the old times when you had, you know, Hogan and the Warrior in one team. And, you know, it doesn't feel the same.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said about the old format of the Survivor Series, when you had nothing but elimination tag team matches, you know, like you said, you had teams of four or five. It was more exciting back then. Now it's like, it's like another regular television program now.
Yeah, it is, and that's unfortunate because I remember rushing to get through my Thanksgiving dinner so I could warm myself up and get ready for this, you know, event because I was so psyched and excited, and now it's not special. I mean, does anybody really care if Nia Jax's team loses or wins? I don't. Does anybody really care whether Raw or SmackDown wins their team, the men's team? I don't. Do you have anybody on any of those teams that you're like, oh my God, how are they ever going to eliminate this guy? No. Nope. So it's become kind of ho-hum, unfortunately, and it's really a shame because this is one of their better events. They've done the same thing with the Royal Rumble by introducing that ridiculous stipulation that you're the guy that gets to go to WrestleMania and basically and fight the champion, basically eliminating 90% of the competitors. You already know going in 90% of the competitors ain't going to win. When it was for nothing, you didn't know who was going to win. The beauty of it was you could have had anybody. You could have had a mid-carder win if he drew number 30 and there was nobody really in the ring much. So it became exciting. And you said, I really don't know who's going to win this match at all. Then, as soon as it became for a WrestleMania shot at the title, well, you can eliminate 99% of the people in that ring. Well, it's the same way with the Survivor Series. We used to have teams where you say, this team's fighting this team. I can't imagine either one of these teams losing every member. How are they going to do that? I haven't seen some of these guys pinned in old ages. Now you just got a bunch of guys who get pinned on a regular basis every week, Mike, and it doesn't have that special feel.
Right. It doesn't have that special feel. And, you know, another thing that hurts the women's side is you're missing because they're in their feud, you're missing Sasha and Bayley, and because she's hurt, you're missing Charlotte, and because she's on maternity leave, you're missing Becky Lynch. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. It makes a big difference in the women's team especially. But even in the men's team, let's face it. So we got AJ Styles. Okay, well, we've seen him pinned many times. You've got Matt Riddle. We've seen him pin many, many times. You've got Sheamus. Sheamus is coming off loss after loss. Braun Strowman doesn't seem as special anymore. He doesn't seem like that monster that's unbeatable. He's definitely the guy that would be toughest to eliminate, you'd imagine. But he's still not whatever. And Keith Lee, well, he's been pinned and he's been taken out. So, you know, he's a factor, but eh. You know, the other side, Jey Uso, Baron Corbin. I mean, come on. There's nobody that's like, wow, what are they going to do? They used to not have the championship matches, so this could have potentially been Drew McIntyre's team versus Roman Reigns' team. So Roman would have Jey Uso, and maybe Drew would have Sheamus, where you say, oh, well, we had that whole big lead-up. Maybe is Sheamus going to turn on him in this match? Are they going to work it together as a team like they used to when they first started their careers? This is very fascinating. At least you'd have those guys where you say, who's going to eliminate Roman? Who's going to eliminate Drew? Somebody's got to eliminate one of them. So there would be some interest. There's no interest because you didn't go that route. You decided, let's take most of the top guys and we'll put them in other feuds, and then the leftovers will go in the Survivor Series. No. How come Bobby Lashley's not on Team Drew? You know, how come it's not Drew McIntyre, Sheamus, Bobby Lashley? All on the same team. Well, you say, wow, okay, they got the champions on that team, and Roman Reigns and Sami Zayn and Jey Uso. Okay, wow, they got, you know, that's a good team. No, you didn't do that. You filled out your card with your top guys and then said, who we got left? You guys are Survivor Series guys. I don't understand that, Mike. Either do the damn event or don't. Why do we have to have... The original Survivor Series had no other matches. They were all Survivor Series matches.
Right. And look, here's the deal. I mean, I don't know if he's on one of the teams, but is R-Truth on one of the teams? I mean,
nope.
I mean, we don't think much of that title, but it's a title. You know, usually if you put a title, usually any title, you put it on one of those Survivor Series teams. It means something, you know. So, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, like I said, it's not – with some of these things, it's not who's in it, is who's not in it. Like I said, the women's match, it's not who's there. It's not who they have available to them. It's who's not there, you know. Charlotte, Becky Lynch. You know, all these people that aren't there due to injury or maternity leave or whatever,
right,
not there.
How come the Fiend's not in it, too? I mean, can you imagine if Drew McIntyre's picking people and he says, well, I'm obviously going to pick Bobby Lashley because he's a champion, even though we don't get along, he's a champion. I'm going to pick Sheamus because I know we got along so well as a tag team. We can work together in the tag team. I'm going to pick, whoever, name one, the top guy. Maybe you want to pick, Keith Lee. Because I believe he's my friend or whatever. They did that gimmick. Why couldn't you have him say, I'm picking Bray Wyatt? And have the rest of the team be like, are you insane? That is a total loose cannon. You can't pick him as a team member. He's not a team player. He's not going to do anything. He's going to show up. God knows what he's going to do. Maybe attack everybody. And he'd say, look, I have to pick the top guys. I have to rely on the fact that he's gonna be there when we need him. I don't know. You're right, I don't know. But what do you want me to do? You could have even gotten to the point where Bray Wyatt, sweater vest Bray Wyatt, came out and said, well, I'm on the Survivor Series team, to which Drew McIntyre can say, no, I didn't pick you. I picked the Fiend. That would have been cool. Because then you could have clearly seen, well, there's a difference between what the people think of Bray Wyatt and what they think of the Fiend. No, we don't even have that. We have no intrigue. There's no extra storylines going on here. There's no things that we say, I wonder if this is going to happen. I wonder if that's going to happen. I remember every Survivor Series, Mike, I'd have that. Is Hogan and the Warrior going to get into it? Or is these two teams going to get into it? Maybe this guy's turning face during the match because they're not getting along. We're not doing any of that this year. We're just having a dysfunctional team where everybody hates everybody against a team of just thrown together people, hishka bibble, for no reason other than a fake tournament. And it doesn't work.
That's right. And that's the thing. It doesn't work. I mean, you could have even sort of done your idea with the cult leader Bray Wyatt, you know?
Yeah.
Have him show up as the cult leader and he say, maybe I'll keep this guy because this guy's a stronger guy. I mean, people don't think a lot of the sweater vest guy, you know? They don't think a lot of it. They think that's that happy-go-lucky Mr. Rogers, you know, type of person, you know. They don't think much of him. They might think a little bit more of – we know what they think of the Fiend, but they might think a little bit more of the cult leader, Bray Wyatt, you know.
I mean, you even could have had the gimmick where he didn't show. And the rest of the team said, great, now it's, you know, 4-on-5. Told you not to pick Bray. Good move, freaking Drew McIntyre. Great move. But when two or three people get eliminated and maybe it's just Drew McIntyre in there against three people, those lights go out and boom, the Fiend's in the middle of the ring. Where you're like, oh, well, he waited, but he showed up. If you want to make him a face, is that not the best way to do it? I mean, I don't understand what's going on. I don't understand where you're going with the Fiend. First you say, well, I think we're going to make him a face. Then you're indicating he may have Alexa Bliss under a spell against her will. Well, I don't know what you want to do. I don't know what you want to do. You want to put him in a feud with Randy Orton, who's a heel, and then you back off and say, no, we better not do that because we might want to keep him a heel. You better make a decision because what you're doing is just running around in a circle, and he's not even involved in the Survivor Series. That's not good. How is that good? It's not. There's so much going on in the Survivor Series, and you can't figure out a decent team. Oh, by the way, I don't think Retribution's in it either, so there goes that idea, right, that we're going to have a Retribution against some team. I don't know, Mike. If you take away Roman Reigns versus Drew McIntyre from this card, this ain't much of a card.
Right. And frankly, had you not jobbed them out, to the what I'm saying. Hey, you not dropped them out a couple times to the Hurt Business. You could have had the Hurt Business versus Retribution as a Survivor Series team.
Yes, which is what I thought they were going to do. Absolutely what I thought they were going to do. And then I thought, well, maybe they're going to do something with, Seth Rollins at the Survivor Series, and maybe Rollins and Murphy will be on the same team at that point, and they'll stretch this out. No, it seems like there was no advanced planning for this, and they just looked around and said, well, Lashley and the champions are going to fight. All the champions are going to fight each other. Then what does that have us left? Well, here's who we got left. I mean, God bless him, I always liked Sheamus. Always thought he was underrated, always thought he gave 100%, always thought he was a very, very talented professional wrestler. But the way you have him booked, why is he on the Survivor Series team? I mean, you got Jeff Hardy and Elias, why don't you have them on a team? Can they coexist? Can they coexist when they hate each other? I know you got that, can they coexist when they hate each other, between everybody on there, but maybe it would have been better if it was just two guys and the rest of the guys are getting along so we could further that feud. Now, there's no advanced planning for this, and it doesn't matter who wins. If SmackDown wins, so what? If Raw wins, so what? What's on the line? Nothing's on the line. Remember how last year it was special because you had NXT in there and you're like, well, if they win, it makes them all look bad, you know. And if NXT loses, it makes them look bad. There was something on the line. It's nothing on the line this year. These Survivor Series matches mean nothing. They're just five-man matches. That's all they are. Or women matches, as the case may be, with thrown-together people. For God's sake. You've got women. You've got Lana. God bless her, but you know she's not exactly being booked as a world beater. You got Lana on a team with Lacey Evans, who we haven't seen in God knows how long, and Peyton Royce, who's never really amounted to anything spectacular with the Iconics, and now she's on there. So how am I supposed to take this seriously? How come it's not Sasha Banks and Carmella and Bayley and Asuka? And how come they're not all on the Women's Survivor Series teams? How come? Oh, because the champions got to fight the champions. Well, I got news. They would be fighting each other if they were on Survivor Series team. They would be. That's the whole point. Sasha Banks' team against Asuka's team. For bragging rights. That's what you want. Sami Zayn's team against Bobby Lashley's team. That's what you want. I don't want them to fight one-on-one. I don't care about them fighting one-on-one. I want the Survivor Series matches. The New Day's team against the Street Profits team. That would be cool. I don't know. If you want to water down the Survivor Series until it's just like, well, it's just two Survivor Series matches and they don't mean anything, what really is the point of having them, Todd?
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like I said, what's the point of having a Survivor Series? It's anymore to just throw guys together like in teams and not getting along.
Yeah, that's all it is. And, Mike, wouldn't it have been fascinating if because the women's champions, tag team champions, could fluctuate from Raw to SmackDown, that the declaration was made, well, either captain of the team can choose either one of them. So that means Sasha could choose one or Asuka could choose one and then have them on opposite sides. Wouldn't that have been great?
That would have been great, but what also would have been great is if it's Sasha's team, all right, then would she choose Bayley?
Well, yeah, wouldn't that have been great? Wouldn't that have been great if Sasha says, well, I'm choosing Shayna Baszler, and Asuka says, I'm choosing Nia Jax. And then Sasha says, you know, other women could have went up to her, you know, like jabron women, and said, I'll be the fifth member or whatever. And Sasha Banks wants to win so bad that she says, I have to choose Bayley. Because despite how much I hate her, I know how good she is too. And she has to be on this. She's got to be on this team. Then you have some fascinating drama. We don't have any of that, Mike, because they just took the leftovers.
Right. They just took the leftovers. And look, think about this. Go back a couple of years, and when the SmackDown League at the time invaded Raw, and what happened? And what happened in that match? And it was what happened in that invasion angle was at the end of that angle, we saw that Nia Jax. That was that thing where Nia Jax actually broke her cheekbone or broke her nose or something. Broke Becky Lynch's nose.
Yep.
You know, and they tried to make something out of that, and I mean, with varying effects, but they didn't try hard enough. That could have been a big storyline in a Survivor Series match.
There's so much you could have done, because up to this point, Randy Orton could have been the captain of that team, right? And said, well, I'm going to create my team. But then when Drew McIntyre wins, if that's what you still wanted, you say, McIntyre, you're now the team captain. And he could have said, there's a couple of people I don't want on this team, or I'm making my own team. That's not going to include some of Randy Orton's guys. There was a lot you could do to flesh out, but you have to make the champions the captains. And then you hope that at some point in time, the two champions from opposite teams get in the ring together. See, that's the whole anticipation. Sasha Banks' team, Asuka's team. But are we going to see Sasha Banks and Asuka, the two champions? And eventually, of course, you do. And that's the payoff. Roman Reigns and Drew McIntyre. Okay, their teams are fighting. Are we ever going to get that point where, you know, Drew gets the hot tag and Roman's in the ring? Yeah. Yeah. And then there you go. We don't have that to look forward to, because this ridiculous, nonsensical, horrible planning for a Survivor Series event. A Survivor Series is what it says. It's not a night of champions. It's not when champions fight champions. It's when teams fight teams. And the champions can be the captains. That makes sense, because who could argue? You're the. So here's what you would have had. You would have had the women's one match, which of course would have been Asuka's team versus Sasha Banks' team. You would have had Sami Zayn's team versus Bobby Lashley's team. You would have obviously had Drew McIntyre's team versus Roman Reigns' team. Good enough. Good enough. At least those matches would have been good enough. Then if you want to throw some undercards and say who's left over, I'm all for that. Because you've built up some great anticipation with this. And of course, the rub is that bad guys have to reluctantly say, I'm taking this face on my team because I reluctantly have to admit he's good and I want to win. And of course, faces have to do the same thing. They have to say, as much as I hate this guy, I think he can help us win, and winning is the objective, so I'm taking him. That makes an interesting thing when you see teams you'd never see before. It would have been fascinating. And we would have had a lot of good moments, especially if the Nia Jax thing where they say, well, what? How come, you know, we're champions, we're not getting our own Survivor Series match? No, you're not, because we don't have enough women. So because you're Raw and SmackDown and you represent both, you're open market. They can choose you. And then can you imagine if one chose Nia and one chose Shayna? And you're going to wait for that moment, aren't you? You're going to wait for that moment when Nia Jax is in the ring and somebody tags Shayna and there's like, what are they going to do? That's just good writing. That's what fans want to see. Instead, we're going to see, AJ Styles is in there with who? Jey Uso? We've seen it. Oh, here comes Baron Corbin, and he's in there with Braun Strowman. Seen it 100 million times. There's no anticipation. There's just no anticipation. And that's a shame, because this is one of these big events that there should be a lot of anticipation. And there should be a lot of storylines and branches on the tree where you say, I wonder what's going to happen. Nope, we don't get it. We don't get it because the WWE's lazy. And they're complacent. Worse than lazy is they're complacent. Now, I hear they're looking for a new head writer. Here's my thought. Don't hire a head writer. Just keep tuning into this show. Write down what we say and everything will just be fine. You'll be good. Because, to be honest, any head writer that goes in there is going to be subjected to, we're altering your story 800 different ways. We're disregarding this thought. We're ending this storyline before you even get a conclusion. And then fans are going to say, the writers suck. Well, the writers suck because they can't write. They're not allowed to write. When they do write something good, it's cut off at the heels or they're fired. So, yeah, I mean, you know, if you take that job, you're a masochist because you're just letting yourself in for all kinds of abuse. All kinds of abuse. They're never going to be happy with you. So we want to reach out to all demographics with our storylines. That's one of their qualifications. Want to reach out to all demographics. All demographics? The hugest part of your audience is over 50. So what are you telling me? I want a writer that writes down for children? That's not going to work. You're going to lose the over 50. I want a writer that writes for young 20-somethings. Well, okay. Well, I could argue that there's no real difference between 20-somethings and 50-something when it comes to wrestling. They want the same thing. I think your mistake is that you're trying too hard to be everything instead of one thing. There were people who loved Stone Cold Steve Austin who were 12. I would hardly say that his character was written for a 12-year-old when he's sticking up the middle finger, drinking beer, and stomping a mud hole in people's ass and calling people sons of bitches. Or DX is crotch chopping, telling people to suck it. But the bottom line was they were there and they were watching it. So, no, you don't need people to write for specific demographics. You just need a good story, and all the demographics will come along. Okay? There are 8-year-olds and 12-year-olds who love Harry Potter. There are 50-year-olds who love Harry Potter. They just wrote it for what it was and said whoever likes it, likes it. That's the mistake. You can't group it in and say, now let's write something for 12-year-olds. Okay, we'll write R-Truth in a comedy skit. Let's write something for the over 50 crowd. You can't do that. That's no way to approach a writing assignment or a wrestling assignment. Just write good, compelling stuff, and it will work for all demographics. That's the mistake they make, Mike. You can't categorize it and say we need a story for this, a story for that, or no one will be happy.
No, you're right, and that's the thing. You look at some of the stuff they were doing back in the Attitude Era, and it's like, okay, but you're still getting the 12-year-old demographic, 12, 15, you know,
yep.
year old demographic, you know?
Yep.
I mean, there were times, I like to use the Married with Children. That show is not meant for 12-year-old people. But
right.
throughout the history of the show, it wasn't just the 20-somethings that watched it. There was a lot of 12-year-old, 15-year-old people that watched that show. But they weren't writing for those people. Okay? So,
right.
So that's the thing. There are times when you don't write for a certain person, but they'll end up watching you anyway because those characters, the storylines are so compelling and the characters are so compelling. You know, that's the problem. They don't have the storylines, and even when they do have it, the characters aren't compelling enough. I mean, what made that thing was Mandy Rose and Mandy and Otis so compelling is Otis has a character. People love him. Mandy is somewhat of a character, but,
right.
but Otis made that thing go. And that writer, whoever she was, knew what she had.
Yep.
All right.
And she was rewarded with it by being fired because, you see, this is exactly what I'm trying to say. They don't understand. The very first thing I would tell them if they hired me as a writer is you have to throw out everything you think you know about writing for wrestling because you're wrong. There is no specific writing for demographics. Throw it out the window. It's the same thing as a band saying, I think I'll write a song that will appeal to teenagers. Now I think I'll write one that will appeal to the 50-something. It's not going to work. You just got to create your art and hope enough people like it. And they will if it's compelling. So all you really need to do is create compelling, interesting, and unique characters and put them in situations that people are interested in the outcome of. That is it. That is your only job description. Not writing for specific demographics. Not trying to look at the needle and say, well, this week, this only many people between the age of 18 and whatever. Throw that out the window. I know that it means something as far as the advertisers are concerned because they want that younger crowd because they're the ones who spend the money, they supposedly whatever. But I'm going to tell you something. If tomorrow you ask Tony Khan, would you like to win the 18 to 30 demographic and lose the ratings by 1 million people or have no one watch your show that's 18 to 30 but win it by 1 million people, guess which one he's going to choose? I'll win it by 1 million people. Any idiot would choose that. It doesn't matter what their ages are. It doesn't matter. The sponsors may matter because it'll change the demographics of what they think. They're not going to promote certain products to, 50-year-olds. And they won't promote certain products to 18-year-olds. But it doesn't matter because you'll get the other advertisers. Who will? Once they look at your demographic, it's important to the advertisers, but it's not important to the federation. What's the difference? If you said to AEW tomorrow, I can guarantee you, you'll do 1.4 million on Wednesday, but only 1% of them will be in that key demographic. They'd say, that's okay. I'll pull the trigger on that. And they'd be idiots if they didn't, because they'll find different sponsors then. WWE's got to understand that not everything fits into a neat little barrel like that of, well, the 18-year-old's like this and the 25-year-old's like that. It just doesn't work. It doesn't work. Is that how they write Game of Thrones? Well, how do we appeal to 12-year-olds? I know. Let's throw a wacky character in that, you know, does stupid, funny comedy. No, they don't do that. They just say, look, this is what we are. This is what we're trying to be. If you want to... if you want to join us, fine. If you don't want to join us, fine. But we're not writing specifically for anyone, for any reason. And they're successful. That's what has to happen with the WWE. But they got to stop this purposely destroying their own pay-per-views. Survivor Series is not interesting because it's not the Survivor Series. It's more like Clash of Champions, where the champions are fighting. I want the real Survivor Series. I don't want the Royal Rumble where the winner gets a shot at the title and R-Truth is in there and all the tag team guys are in there and all the jabrones are in there that you haven't seen in 6 years. And you're like, well, they're not going to win because they're not going to WrestleMania. I can tell you that. So who's that leave? Two people that could possibly win? So we just sit there and wait for those two people. That's dumb. When you could have the excitement of, I don't know who's going to win. Anybody could win. That's exciting. Try it just 1 year, WWE. Just 1 year. Try to go back and say, this year, the Royal Rumble is not for a WrestleMania title shot. It's just for you won the Royal Rumble. And watch what happens. They won't do it. Because they think this is a great idea. But, Mike, they're slowly destroying their key pay-per-views, the ones that people tuned into because they were unique.
Right. And to my knowledge, I don't see AEW doing that. I don't see Impact doing that. Before they had to shut down, I didn't see NWA Power doing that. You know, none of these other companies destroy their own pay-per-view. And frankly, and going back to the writing and stuff and booking, if I'm a writer, the first thing, and they're seriously looking at me to go in there and write for them, I'll say to them, look, I've been following what you're doing, and look, here's the deal. If I come up with something good, you cannot cut it off at the knees. You know? I mean, I've seen you do that too often. And that's what they've done. They've had some good storylines going on, but they cut them off at the knees. You know?
Absolutely. And they're not making their pay-per-views special anymore. You know, when people came up with the original ideas of these pay-per-views, they were unique. And you say, wow, it's teams of five. Strive to survive, right? Yeah, that's cool. And you're going to see champions versus champions and stuff. Now it's just, oh, cut the team thing. Just put the champion against the champion. That's good enough. We don't need to bother with filling out four teams. That takes too much work. That takes too much planning. How are we going to write for four or five matches that are that many people in them? That's just too much work. Well, okay. Fine. Take the easy way out. Everybody in the world lately is taking the easy way out. Doesn't matter what it is, folks. Everybody's taking the easy way out. There are authors on Amazon right now who didn't write one single word. You know what they do? They say, I got an idea. I want to create a book on how you can go on a diet and eat nothing but chocolate and lose 25 pounds. So I'm going to hire a ghostwriter. Can you write that for me for $500? Somebody out in, you know, some foreign country? Yeah, I'll do it. Okay, cool. And then they put their name on it and put it on Amazon and say, I'm an author. No, you're not. Or somebody says, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to hold a bunch of samples and whatever, and I'm going to put them all together, and I don't even play an instrument, and I'll use auto-tune to sing, and I'm a musician. No, you're not. And now we've got oh, I guess I'll just do the bare minimum and just throw caution to the wind and say, you here, you here, you here. That's my booking. I'm a booker. Look, I'm a booker. No, you're not. No, you're not. You see, the people who really are supposed to do this stuff are the people who have a passion for it. The people who don't look at, oh, my God, you know how hard it would be to write, to book four or five of these matches in one card and you know, produce them? Oh, that's too hard. No, I don't want that person. I want that person whose eyes light up and say, oh, man, you know what it would be like to have the chance to book that? I'd love it. That's the guy I want. I want the guy who says, I want to write a book and I'm going to research everything myself because I want to know that the people who read it are getting my information the way I want it placed. That's the guy I want. I want the musician who says, I'm going to take 5 years to learn these instruments so I can play them myself and not just borrow them from some other song. That's the guy I want. We don't have a society that anymore, and wrestling doesn't either. And I got news. It even files down to wrestlers, because wrestlers are like, well, I can do a flip, and I can do this, and I can do that. I'm a wrestler. No, you're not. Not until you can engage an audience and make them want to come see you. Then you're a wrestler. Until then, you're just a warm body. You might be an athlete, but you're not really a wrestler until you can actually make people say, I want to pay to see, come see this person. Because that's your job. That's your job. Let's face it. Anyway, we'll see what ends up happening tonight on SmackDown. Like I said, Big E's supposed to be joining the SmackDown Survivor Series team. Big deal. Does that make a huge difference in anybody's, oh, wow, is that going to be a major thing? No. No, it's not. And I guess the Lars Sullivan thing is done with. I ain't seen him in whatever, in the ring. I don't know what's going on, folks. I don't know what's going on in the WWE. It seems they can only concentrate on a couple of angles at once, and both of them are on SmackDown. So we'll see what happens. We will be back here on Sunday to talk about it. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. WrestleChat Radio is a Savage Blade production.